We've all been there. Noisy uni flatmates. Music blaring. Phones going off in the library. But with long-lasting battery life on the lightweight and portable Dell XPS powered by Intel Core Ultra, you can get away from the distractions without needing to find a plug. So you can get back to, well, built for those who get things done. The Dell XPS. Built for you. Dell.co.uk/learning.
Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
And I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
Welcome to our Netflix debut. That is right. Switched on Pop is now on Netflix.
That's right.
And we're going to kick it off with a 4-part series on the art of the song. We're going to be breaking down each section, the intro, the verse, the chorus, the bridge, to figure out how each section works to move us emotionally. So let's begin.
Let's get it started in here.
That's the unmistakable intro of the Black Eyed Peas' Let's Get It Started from their 2003 album, Elefunk. Somehow it's actually not the first song on the album. I think that's an oversight.
Crazy.
It begins with Fergie's dry vocal, with that vocal fry and those bluesy bends. Then we get this kick drum, eighth notes. Apple the App comes in, introduces a walking electric bass. We get this stacked building vocal harmonies telling us exactly what to do. Run, don't walk to the party, it's about to go off. And then there we are. We're off into the verse. It's a complete musical statement. And most importantly, this introduction is also foreshadowing the chorus, the most important part of the song, when Fergie sings, "Let's Get It Started." Because that, of course, is the hook.
Yeah, with us making our Netflix debut, I thought you might go with a track like, Jay-Z, Allow Me to Reintroduce Myself. But I think this Let's Get It Started intro is entirely appropriate. This is such an iconic song, and yet I've never thought so hard about how this song starts before. But it actually like sets up the whole track in these subtle ways.
The Black Eyed Peas know how to get things started.
Yeah.
And so does every form of music ever made. I mean, all genres, all styles of writing songs, every song has to have an introduction. It has to greet you.
Yes.
What do you feel like the role of the intro is in a song?
Well, in the world of pop music, it's often to grab your attention.
Yeah.
It's to say like, hey, pay attention, listen to this, stop what you're doing, because we have something great in store for you.
An introduction has to be love at first sight because you have to keep on going. And here's the thing, though, Nate. I frankly hate introductions.
What? Songwriter Charlie Harding hates introductions?
If you ask my songwriting students at Berkeley and at NYU how I feel about introductions, this is what they're going
to
tell you.
Charlie needs the intro to be as short as this video.
Cut the intro in half.
Cut the intro.
Cut the intro.
Cut the intro.
I just constantly hear songs that are self-indulgent with long introductions that don't grab my attention, and I think that we should cut them. I think that my opinion about this is probably formed by the fact that you and I really came of age in the 90s when, you know, we've done research showing that the average song length peaked in 1998, 4 minutes and 29 seconds. People were really taking their time back in the 90s. I mean, take, for example, Sean Colvin's Sonny Came Home. Mandolin. I love the mandolin. It's still going. Get some drums. Some organ. Some guitar lines. Some nice harmonic changes. But what time is it right now? I mean, we are currently at 30 seconds, 32 seconds, 34 seconds before we get a single line. And I gotta tell you, I love this song. It is a smash. And I actually don't think that's a terrible introduction. I actually think it's quite compelling.
Yeah.
It's constantly changing. It's evolving. But it is long, and it's not alone. I mean, the Smashing Pumpkins, Tonight Tonight. I don't even have time to get to the end. Here we are, you know, 10 seconds in. Let's just fast forward, I don't know, 40 seconds.
Wow.
44 seconds in, we finally get some vocals, but there's probably no one who's more of a culprit of long intros than the Cranberries. Their song Zombie, 49-second long intro.
Whoa.
The song Linger, even longer. We get some nice strings, some guitars. Let's fast forward a little bit to, I don't know, let's say 45 seconds into the song. Woo, we are like
eons.
Over 50 seconds in, and we finally get to the verse.
Yeah.
Nate, what is the old adage?
Don't bore us, get to the chorus. Those introductions are like 3 hours in TikTok time.
They're epic.
So if Sean Colvin, Billy Corgan, or Dolores O'Riordan were your songwriting students, you would say, get that out of my classroom. Get it down to a cool 6 seconds and try again.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And I would be wrong. Because, to be fair, those are all smashes. They're great songs. And those intros definitely feel like they could be a long wind-up scene in a movie. Like, it feels almost more like scoring than the introduction to a song. But having grown up in this time with these long extended intros and, you know, since then, I probably have developed a bad phone addiction. I just feel like I can't bear having these long introductions anymore. And I feel like music has sort of responded the same. Like, I feel like the intro has fundamentally changed. So I guess I want to look at with you, like, does the introduction still matter?
Mm. I'd like to think the introduction still matters. But, you know, part of getting older is accepting change and better understanding it. So
yeah,
let's discover what's actually happening before we make any judgments.
Okay, so I began my inquiry about the importance of the introduction by just thinking about, you know, do first impressions actually matter? I would prefer they wouldn't. I mean, I don't love to get dressed and, you know, do my hair upright in the morning, but it turns out that, you know, there's a lot of research on the power of the first impression. Have you ever heard of the concept thin slicing?
Only with regard to deli meat. Gotta be real with you, Chuck.
The idea of thin slicing is this research proposed by Nalini Ambedi and Robert Rosenthal back in 1992. They published in Psychological Bulletin this study that basically says that people are able to infer a lot of information and actually make accurate judgments based off of very low amounts of exposure to an idea. So basically, you can meet someone quickly and you can infer some information about them that's quite accurate. Now, this idea is popularized by Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, which I mentioned because this research is extended into the world of music. Ooh. Researcher Carol Krumhansel at Cornell University published a 2010 paper called Plink, Thin Slices of Music. And this research says that we can instantly know a song from a first impression.
Wow.
That if you play just 300, maybe 400 milliseconds of a clip of music, that you can know that song. And I feel like if this research is true, then it means that intros really matter and I need to be paying way more attention to them. And I figured we could test this research on a PhD in musicology, someone who has made nearly 500 episodes of Switched On Pop, Dr. Professor Nate Sloan.
Oh, you're talking about me. Yeah.
I've prepared a quiz for you, and it includes an important prize if you can get 10 out of 10 songs. Here's how it's going to go. You've got a first attempt, 300 milliseconds of a song. Second attempt, 400 milliseconds of a song. If you don't get it, I'll just play you the intro. You ready?
All right. Yeah, I'm ready.
Here's song one. Any idea?
Carly Rae Jepsen, Call Me Maybe, 2012.
Yep.
Saint Jepsen.
The origin story of our podcast.
Yes.
She inspired us to make Switched On Pop. All right, one for one.
Okay, that was encouraging.
You have some good thin slicing abilities. Song two.
That's Let's Get It On by Marvin Gaye. I've been really trying.
Nice.
That's good. That's good. Wow.
All right. Song three.
Oh, it's like an early 2000s. Is it Britney Spears? Is it Toxic? Yeah, it is Toxic. Wow. That's wild.
Isn't that amazing?
This is, I mean, plink thin slicing.
Let me take you back a little further in history.
Okay. The Miles Davis, Freddie Freeloader.
Dang, you're kind of blue.
Wait, this is wild. Yeah. Wynton Kelly on piano.
You have earned that PhD. How about song five?
Oh.
That was 300 milliseconds. Here's 400 milliseconds. People in this study have higher ability to recall a song with a longer slice. 400 milliseconds usually gets a better outcome.
It's not Robin's Call Your Girlfriend, but it is. It's something. Is it like a synth dance track? Oh, wow. Nope.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll give you a pass on one of them. Let's see how you do on number six.
The Beatles, All You Need Is Love.
I've saved the hardest ones for last.
Oh. Is it a Led Zeppelin song? One of their acoustic... So like Over the Hills and Far Away or something like that. Nope.
Do you give your students two free passes and you know, assignments? Maybe we'll give you two free passes. I don't think you're going to get the next ones.
Way to set me up for failure here.
You didn't even hear it. Here it is again.
Okay. It's a... It's like a turntable sound. Wait, give it to me one more time.
Okay.
It's like a 90s track. It's Groove Is in the Heart by D-Light.
Wow. I mean, some of the outcomes of this research does show that people are able to often accurately place decade and time frame, even if they can't get the song.
That's Missy Elliott's Get Your Freak On, right?
That's Work It from 2002.
Oh, Work It, obviously. Yeah.
So you were within 10 years or so. Man, you're struggling.
Something I'm learning about this is if you don't recognize it immediately, you're not going to come up with it.
Oh,
it's like instinctual, you know? You hear it and you know it, or you don't, and you guess and flail and embarrass yourself. Those are the only two options.
All right. Number nine.
Okay, I'm gonna ask for it one more time, not that it'll make a difference.
What are you thinking?
Despacito.
Ooh, interesting. This is a really hard one.
I still don't know what it is.
If this world were mine.
Hey. Oh, wow. Drop it like it's hot. If this world was mine, I'd take your dreams and make them most of that's a 0.1% of listeners. If you're listening or watching this and you correctly identified Luther by Kendrick Lamar and SZA, like, let us know, because that you might be a savant.
Well, and I was really messing with you there because, you know, it begins with this just lovely nylon acoustic string guitar, which basically hardly occurs through the rest of the track. And then it moves on to a classic sample. So I was trying to throw you off multiple ways. I think I succeeded. I have one more for you. Here's number 10. I think you have no chance. I don't know if you're going to get this song within the first like 10 seconds. Nothing.
It's Mariah Carey.
Yes.
But what track is it?
Ready?
Are you trolling me right now?
And no, but the prize was to maintain your musical dignity, and you have not succeeded.
But I'm asking you because we did this with a 90s music quiz like years ago, and I didn't know Mariah Carey's Fantasy, so I feel like you're throwing it back in my face, and I thought you were my friend.
It turns out first impressions matter. I think that's what I'm learning from this research.
Yeah.
You were able to capture many of those, and I tried to deceive you on a number of them.
Well, I have another takeaway. In addition to, you know, you either know it or you don't, it's like songs that you know really well are easy to identify.
That's right.
Songs that you've heard a million times, right? Those are the ones that you can just instinctually get. Songs that you might be familiar with but aren't like, you know, buried deep in your synaptical pathways, harder to get.
It turns out you can reset your expectations about songs, though, Nate. You know, at the beginning of the show, I played you Let's Get It Started by the Black Eyed Peas. If you were alive back in the 2000s, you would know that it was originally released in 2003 as Let's Get R Word, which at the time was slang for getting wasted. The song even included a bridge about an epileptic seizure. Disability rights advocates were rightly appalled at this song. But somehow the song is given a second chance to introduce itself to the world. The Black Eyed Peas rewrite it for the 2004 NBA playoffs, and it's a hit.
So you're telling me that Big Ben Wallace and the 2004 Detroit Pistons are responsible for saving the reputations and careers of the Black Eyed Peas?
That's right. I mean, I'm willing to admit that there have been good introductions in the past. So many classic tracks. I mean, I think about like... The Who are so good at intros.
Yeah. Hold on a second. I'm just going to go microwave a burrito.
You won't be fooled again by another long intro. I understand. While you're microwaving your burrito, I'm going to play you Lynyrd Skynyrd's Free Bird. I mean, you're basically strapped in for a 9-minute long song now, right?
Totally. You got to refill your lighter during that intro, perhaps.
These are both the epically long variety. How about the kind that gets you dancing from beat one? It's a long break in Superstition.
I love this, Charlie. It's making me think of one of my favorite stories from like the annals of pop history, which is when the Temptations were recording Papa Was a Rolling Stone. Which has an absurdly long intro.
Yes.
The producer of the track, Norman Whitfield, didn't tell the lead singer, Dennis Edwards, when he was going to come in. And Dennis Edwards was just in the recording studio just getting pissed, being like, what this is, the intro still going on, there's strings, there's like what? And Norman Whitfield intentionally did that because he wanted Dennis Edwards to sound a little mad when he started singing that song, to like, you know, it's a song about an absentee father, and he wanted to have like an edge in his voice. And Dennis Edwards finally comes in after, I don't know, like 2-3 minutes and goes, it was the 3rd of September.
It was the 3rd of September.
And he sounds pissed, and it's because he actually is, because of that long intro.
I love that story. It tells us that, yes, the intro can be purposeful. There were so many great classic ones. I mean, Nate, can I play you one more?
As long as I don't have to guess it, yes. How dare you?
Yep.
How dare you?
That's Rick Astley is never going to give you up. You just got Rick rolled. I mean, it's a great intro.
I'm speechless. Yeah, it is a good intro. It is a good intro.
I just feel like intros maybe haven't been as good lately. I don't know. I'm trying to get into my head of like, why is my primary advice like kill the intro? Maybe it's that, you know, our sort of nostalgia loop obsessed culture has made it so that intros are less original. I found this really long playlist recently called Pairs of Songs with Eerily Similar Beginnings, created by someone with some of the best ears in music.
I'm Grace Bellman. I am a music writer and professional playlist maker.
So for the past 12 years, Grace has been collecting songs that sound alike in their introduction. Sonic twins, if you will. And it started with a new song that sounded like an old song.
I had heard Back to Black by Amy Winehouse and Baby Love by The Supremes. I had noticed that like they started very similarly.
Once she heard this first pairing, she started hearing them everywhere. And they weren't just new and old songs. They were also songs that were sometimes made in the same era.
Then I noticed there was a Kinks song and a Beach Boys song. Kinks' Sweet Lady Genevieve and Beach Boys' God Only Knows. Those started the same.
Whoa, same key and everything?
Yep.
Grace has some sharp ears.
This playlist is full of songs where like they start with the same chord, the first few notes. They're almost always in the exact same key. And what's interesting is that for Grace, that this playlist ended up being less about things sounding the same and often more about finding really unlikely connections between songs of very different types.
I have some favorites. I have like D'Angelo and Eric Satie one. There's this Eric Satie piece that I would play called Je Te Veux on the piano.
What?
She says it sounds like D'Angelo's Back to the Future Part 1 from Black Messiah.
That is a deep pull.
So ultimately what Grace finds from this playlist hunting that she's been doing for over a decade is that intros have a lot of information to tell you that they're worth paying attention to.
I mean, like everybody, especially now, my attention span is short, but it always has been even before the introduction of smartphones into my life. And I find myself being judgy on the first 3 seconds. Like, this is what your first impression is. Like, what you, the artist, have decided that the first impression of me will be. And I know you thought really, really hard about it. And I know that for a lot of artists, it's like they want you to keep your attention. And so I think there are some artists who I'm sure, like you had said before, like, really take their time and luxury over, like, 6 minutes of guitar or whatever. But I just think even that itself is informative. Oh, you're the type of artist that thinks that I now think that that's important, because if you've decided to keep that in there, even though I might be bored by it, what does that say about the rest of the song? Is this a song where like I'm going to have to do close listening, where like, you know, is it the way I listen to like minimalist music, where it's kind of the same thing over and over for a while, and I really appreciate the small changes. So if you have a kind of boring intro, then I might go, oh, okay, I might have to like listen to really closely to what you're doing and listen for a change. But at the end of the day, my favorite intros are the ones that catch my attention and the ones that just try to like be as flashy as possible.
I love what Grace is saying here. It's like whether it's long, whether it's short, whether it's, you know, eye popping or whether it's calm.
Yeah.
The first thing you hear in a track is essentially announcing to a listener, like, this is who I am. This is my sound. This is my artistry. These are my musical values. And going back to our, you know, thin slicing thing, it's like you can get that from maybe just a couple hundred milliseconds of sound. You learn so much about an artist, which is a way I've never really thought about music before, honestly.
In an episode of Switched on Pop long ago, we theorized this idea of the pop overture, where artists would put a secret chorus melody into the beginning of their song just so that it's familiar by the time you hear it again. I think one of the first ones we identified was Closer by the Chainsmokers featuring Halsey.
Da 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 da. We ain't never getting older. Da, 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 da. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
So, a little. What do you call that? A subliminal chorus.
Right. Exactly. So people are basically like, all right, let's get the chorus first, but we're gonna have to have an intro. What are we gonna do about it? And yet, since that sort of like 2010s EDM era, where we're hearing a lot of those pop overtures, more and more the intro has just been chopped off. Take, for example, Sabrina Carpenter and her song, Taste.
Oh, I leave quite an impression. 5 feet to be exact.
She leaves such a strong impression, she doesn't even need a first impression. There is no intro. Boom, right into the song. Benson Boone does the same thing on Sorry I'm Here for Someone Else.
I'm sorry I'm here for someone else, but it's good to see your face.
unless you count that dun dun as an intro, but I don't think that's enough.
I wouldn't say.
Another recent hit does the same thing, Stella Lefty's Boston.
On a train back to Boston, and we're jumping the gun, and I'm telling you, baby, this is the part where I'd run, but I like it when you're nice, like it when you're
no
nice.
Intro.
Maybe part of the reason we used to have intros was for radio DJs to be able to transition between songs. I'm just making this up as we go.
That's a good reason.
Like, is there an explanation? Perhaps that's technological. When you're able to, you know, pull up a song at will on a streaming device, you don't necessarily need to have that padding of the intro. I'd have to think more about this, but I'm not ready to say it's just a case of like, oh, people don't have attention spans anymore.
You know, the technology is certainly a reason. You know, we've listened to a number of intros earlier on that were over 30 seconds long. A song on streaming platforms usually does not count as a full stream unless someone has listened to at least 30 seconds of it. And so if you haven't given someone some interesting material early on, you know, they might hit skip and go to the next song, which is incredibly easy now. I mean, you used to have to get up, you know, change records. That was kind of a pain. And so, yeah, people have much more flexible listening habits, perhaps.
I'm sure there's some music fans who are distressed that the introduction might be a lost art, but I feel pretty confident saying that it's not going anywhere. And in fact, I can back this up because I went and spoke to one of the busiest music producers in the game right now, someone who's worked with Taylor Swift, Noah Kahan, Gracie Abrams, and has made music for decades with his band, The National. It's Aaron Dessner.
Huh.
And Aaron is such a fun person to talk to about this topic because not only has he worked on like some massive hits of the last few years, but he's really thoughtful and very generous about how he approaches making a song. So I feel like he's the perfect person for us to hear from about how and why introductions still matter in the world of music. And the very first song I asked him about, it might be the biggest track he's worked on. It's Cardigan by Taylor Swift, and it has a very unique intro.
Vintage tea, brand new phone, high heels on, cobblestones. When you are young, they assume you know nothing.
Here's what Aaron had to say about this introduction.
That one's interesting. It's actually what you hear when that song starts. You hear the air conditioning in the backstage of an arena in Germany where the National was playing, where I wrote it, because it was really cold. It was like a hockey arena in Germany or something, an awful, awful situation. But then that's me patting my leg, you know, like playing drums on my leg, which I often do, which I kind of learned. I learned over time that if you record yourself like playing surfaces or your body and record it with an iPhone, it just sounds cool. I wrote the music first and Taylor wrote to it. I think she said that when she heard that sound of the, what is me like playing my thigh essentially, that it reminded her of someone walking like on cobblestones in high heels, like unevenly. And that gave her an image in her mind, which sort of like led her into the narrative that she wrote, you know?
That's wild. Okay. I was like, choruses are the most important thing. It's the thing you write first. And in fact, the entire song concept came from like Aaron Dessner just going on his knees.
I know. It's wild to think that one of the biggest songs off Taylor Swift's album, Folklore, starts with air conditioning from a backstage room in a German like stadium. And then Aaron Dessner just slapping his thighs. That's wild.
Wow. Okay. He has a lot to teach us.
Speaking of introductions, I also had this theory that another Taylor Swift song might be inspired by one of Aaron Dessner's tracks for The National. Huh. There's a National song called The System Only Dreams in Total Darkness that has a really striking opening. Those angelic voices. They're a little reminiscent of the Taylor Swift song from Tortured Poets Department that Aaron Dessner produced called So Long London.
Those breathy cathedral vocals. Yeah, I hear it.
So I asked Aaron, hey, I have this conspiracy theory that these two songs are related. Is there any truth to it? Here's what he said.
I'm going to debunk that.
Oh.
It's a good story how this happened. Taylor was, she arranged those vocals to go at the end of the song. So she was doing those choral, like these angelic choral parts over the end of the last chorus of the song, the kind of that you hear when you listen to the song, you'll hear her doing that. But then she actually said, but what if that went at the beginning of the song? Taylor is interesting when she records because she's kind of mapped it out in her head. I think part of it's like comes naturally to her. It's also because she's been thinking about it. But so she'll come in and like kind of have a whole architecture in her head that she's gonna chase down, and that was one of those things that then we were like, oh wow, that's so beautiful, but it was at the beginning, and then she kind of sang more to it.
So I was wrong, but it did kind of teach me something, which is that you might think the introduction is the first thing you make when you're making a song, you know, seems like kind of logical, start with the intro and then keep going.
Yeah,
and it turns out that is not the case. In fact, it might be the last thing you do is you make the whole song and then you're like, okay, now what do we put at the very beginning? Mm-hmm. And in the case of this song, it's what you did at the very end. Another really fun introduction that Aaron's cooked up is actually the lead single from Gracie Abrams' forthcoming album. It's called Hit the Wall. And I love what Aaron and Gracie did at the beginning of this track.
That is a cool opening sequence. It's like,
right?
It's really organic and yet it feels electronic.
Yeah, I had a similar reaction. I had another theory that I wanted to share with Aaron. I was like, maybe there's some inspiration from minimalist music, you know, Philip Glass, Steve Reich. Is there any truth there? Let's find out.
And the story of that song is basically that I was searching for something to inspire Gracie. Because I feel like we were hitting a wall creatively with the album, where it was like literally we were kind of stuck, where we had like all these different songs, and but we didn't have the centerpiece of it or like the glue. And so I was in the studio early searching one day and just was like, fuck it, I'm going to make the coolest thing I can make. I'm going to sample myself, I'm going to sequence myself, and then I'm going to write chords. And then she walked into that, you know, and she just started, and she wrote the song, and like it just, because just like triggered her brain. And then we felt, oh, hit the wall, that's the glue that binds everything else together, because it's kind of minimalist, weird avant-garde pop song, but it's also like clearly organic, you know, like related to the folkier side of her world. But then lyrically, it's really self-reflective and existential and just brilliant in the way that she's like looking at herself and the patterns of breakdowns and kind of what her life has been like in recent years and all the success too. But like, I think the intro is really, on that song, I would say it's very important. It sets the table in a way, and kind of it piques your curiosity.
So the intro for Hit the Wall is actually pretty short, but yeah, I feel like it captures so much of not only the song but also, you know, what went into creating it.
It's the whole inspiration for writing it. Yeah.
So when Aaron and I were talking, he was actually speaking to me from his studio called Long Pond in upstate New York, where so many artists, including Taylor, have recorded. And I asked him if there was an introduction from his work that stood out, And he kind of looked around his studio and then he told me this.
As far as intros and the introduction, saying Noah Kahn, you know, The Great Divide came out recently, and we made a bunch of songs for it. End of August, which opens his record, so it's the intro to his new record. And I was kind of shocked when he told me it was the first song, because it's kind of this, in general, it's different. It was like a new world in a way for him. But he had written that kind of impressionistic piano that you hear at the beginning that he sings to. And I created this drone around him. And when we recorded it, it was August. And here you can actually see that pond right there. And there's just a ton of crickets and frogs and all birds and all kinds of noise making beautiful things. And so I just opened the door and the piano mics on the U1, Yamaha U1 are right there. And so you really, it's like you hear just this late summer feeling and like this drone of organs and other instruments. And he kind of saw that through with me and trusted it so much and loved it so much to make it the intro to his record, and just how it's being received. That to me is really affirming, life affirming and art affirming, and just felt like, oh, he took a risk, definitely putting a long sort of out there song as the first thing that people would hear. So I really appreciated that.
Oh man, I feel like I've had it all wrong.
Right? The introduction is alive and well. I mean, take it from one of the most in-demand producers in pop right now.
And even those long intros, they can be powerful starts of creation. They can help greet us into a song. Maybe I've been wrong this whole time.
Okay, so if you're changing your tune on the introduction, Charlie...
Yeah.
How do we want to think about this structural part of the song? Like, what is its role? How does one approach it? How are we going to wrap this thing up?
Well, first of all, I need to make a formal apology to all of my students. But, you know, to that point, an introduction has to make a memorable and unique first impression. Mm. Like, it's got to set that scene, but it can't do so in a way that it's just, repeating the same chords. It has to be evolving and taking you somewhere. The sort of musical gesture can't overstay its welcome.
Yes.
It has to set up all of our expectations of where the song is going to eventually go, and it has to do that really quickly. It's a lot to pull off as a musician. It's hard work.
So we've discovered the introduction is alive and well. In fact, it might be one of the most important parts of the song.
Yeah.
Hopefully we've introduced ourselves well. We've captured that thin slice of your attention for anyone finding us on Netflix who just scrolled away from binge watching Bridgerton or Love is Blind and stumbled upon our humble podcast. We hope you come back because we have a whole series planned. What comes after the introduction, Charles?
Well, the intro matters because you don't get the whole story unless you grab someone's attention and you pull them right into the verse.
Yes.
And next week, I believe that, Nate, you are going to argue that justice is due for the verse.
Yes. Very, very underrated part of song structure. IMO.
Until then, thanks for
watching.
Thanks
for listening.
And listening.
Oh, there you go. Got to work on that.
We've all been there. Noisy uni flatmates. Music blaring. Phones going off in the library. But with long-lasting battery life on the lightweight and portable Dell XPS powered by Intel Core Ultra, you can get away from the distractions without needing to find a plug. So you can get back to, well, built for those who get things done. The Dell XPS. Built for you. Dell.co.uk/learning.